What's up, Poya fans? It's the Power of You and Fiction podcast, the nonfiction podcast about fiction and its very real effects on our lives.
And we're coming at you with another one of our favorite segments, a What's Up Wednesday.
Word, word, word. I hope you liked our new format because I think it allows us to tell a more full story without you having to commit to 90 minutes from Jump Street.
Yeah, and if you don't like it, let us know. No guarantee we'll switch it up because it's our show and you can't tell us what to do.
Yeah, but this time we have one of my favorite storytellers, both in his work and in an interview, the writer for the main Green Lantern series, Jeffrey Thorne.
That's right, off the premiere of his issue number one. Go pick that up right now, like right now, pick it up. And we're doing a profile of the writer extraordinaire, the man with the big energy, the big stories, you know what I'm saying, huge dedication, like Lou said, big homie Jeffrey Thorne. And hopefully by the end of this, listeners, you will understand how Jeff, the man, the amazing storyteller, made the choice of coming on to Green Lantern and, you know, just doing it all big.
What's up? What up? What up?
It is Wednesday, my dude.
You are now tuned in to What's Up Wednesday from the Power of You and Fiction podcast. Jeffrey Thorne, Part 1, Life as it Reads.
So, as I always do, I lob it over to my co-host and he gets it kicked off.
So, we're going to start way back at the beginning with little Jeff and the important place fiction has always had in his life. I'm going to start like way back at your sci-fi beginnings. You like tweeted an interesting thread about how your father was the one who got you into sci-fi. Can you say express that verbally?
Oh, yeah. Let me try and be less long-winded than normal. You got a big editing job with my interviews. Yeah, my dad loved this stuff. He turned me on to comics really early. The first comic book I ever read was really this thing called The Great Comic Book Superheroes. It's a big hardcover book. I think it originally came out in like 1971 or something. Obviously, I got it in 77 or 78 when I was 7 or 8. Right. But it had The Spirit. It had The Original Human Torch. It had Submariner, I think. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else in there. Anyway, and I was just like, what is this? This is crazy. And then he brought me copies of these. Again, like there used to be a newspaper strip called back in the 30s and 40s when he was a kid called Prince Valiant. Somebody made a book of all of these strips. He brought me that. So the first set of comics I read were the first set of comics anybody ever made in the superhero realm, right? So I was sort of growing up the way he grew up in that space. Then he hooked me up I'm from DC. When I was a kid, they had this thing called the Big Broadcast, which was every Friday night, I guess about 6:30, whatever the news was, whenever the afternoon news was over, they would stop real broadcasting. And for the whole weekend from 7 o'clock Friday night to 7 a.m. Monday morning or whatever, it would be whatever was on the radio in 1942 or 1937 or whatever. Commercials, TV, the radio shows, everything. So I listened to Spectre. I listened to Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. I listened to all these weird old radio shows. Agent X, you know, we offer you suspense. All these crazy shows that my peers would know nothing about because who the hell is doing that? But those are the shows my dad grew up on. So again, I'm reading Flash Gordon. I'm reading Terry and the Pirates. I'm listening to 1940s radio drama adventures and shit. And then Jack Kirby shows up at a newsstand and I pick up a Commandy, I think. And I was like, what is this? And then it was just on after that. And in terms of sci-fi, he just likes sci-fi. Him and me used to go back and forth. He's a big like Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke type. And I was more into Ursula Le Guin and Roger Zelazny back in those days. And I just sort of just stuck. You either like that stuff right away. You know, I don't think that's something you grow into. Like you either dig it or you don't pretty much right off the top. And we both would, he and my mom got divorced And one of the things that we would do when we would go over to his place is that we would just sit and watch Star Trek reruns.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
And that was like the cap. Like, after that, I was like, all right, I guess this is it. I'm booked for life. And the funny thing was, even back then, I probably would have grown up to be a special effects guy, because even though I love Star Trek the way all Trekkies love Star Trek, the way I loved it also involved, how did they make this? Like, how are they doing this? How did they do that transporter thing? Right. So I would find any magazine I could find. Or they had this book called The Making of Star Trek. I hope it's still in print, because if it's not, it ought to be, which was like basically all the behind the scenes stuff that we just take for granted now, the special features stuff. Like, why did they name it the Jeffries Tube? You know, why did we do this effect this way? How did we do this effect? How come the Enterprise, for instance, why do we have a transporter? Because it was too expensive to land the ship on a planet every week. So we had to figure a way to get them down there without having to do shuttlecraft every time, or land the whole Enterprise every time. We just like, oh, they're just there. Right. And stuff like that. And I was just hooked on it, and I just never stopped.
Hey, yo, it is always wild to me, bro, to think about just like how influential parents are to our upbringing and just like our consumption as fans, and, you know, particularly when it comes to fiction. But like kids, you know what I'm saying? Most of us might want to grow up to be like celebrities, or currently, I guess now, YouTube star. You know, some folks might even want to be a part of like Starship Enterprise, all that stuff. But not many people were thinking like Jeff was thinking and saying, you know what? I want to make that. I want to know every bit of creation that processes and do that myself.
I love it. You know, myself, I'm a structural engineer. And if you know me, I am a process junkie. So imagining little Jeff taking the time to get into the weeds and pulling back the current early, it brings me joy.
Yo, and he also had a rich, rich, rich diversity of content consumption. Like, he had comic books from the 30s and 40s via audio dramas, which we are starting to appreciate ourselves. And then he had TV shows that were depicting adventures all through deep space.
Yeah, that desire and library of storytelling content met Jeff was about it. And Jeff was thinking about story all the time.
Yo, in fact, he sold his first comic book in high school. Yo, imagine that kind of hype.
Bam, I would have been elated. The crazy thing is, that comic would change Jeff's life in ways he wouldn't expect.
I am in high school, coming off my sophomore year, moved in with my dad because me and my mom couldn't get along with each other anymore because I'm growing up, right? And I didn't want to hear it from her. She's like, you got to go live with your dad. So my dad was like, okay, well, you think you're an artist? There's a arts high school in this town, you know, in DC. Get your portfolio together this summer. You can go. Like, I'm sure you'll get in. You're good, right? So I was like, all right, bet. But what did I do? I did not get my portfolio together. So, no, it was going into my sophomore year. And so I didn't have anything to show. I couldn't get in, right? So he's like, you know what? You can go to your neighborhood high school. My neighborhood high school was called Spingarn Senior High. At the time, it was the roughest school in D.C. 1 year at Spingarn was plenty for Jeff. I was like, all right, we ain't doing this again. This is some nonsense up in here. Nothing against anybody. Most of the kids were great, but it was just rougher than I had expected, way rougher than I ever wanted to do again. So I got my stuff together, right? I got my portfolio together. I was ready this time. But that same year, my dad, who likes to collect people, he had gone out one night. And at the same time, I'm at this, okay, wait. in the middle of my year at Spingarn, halfway through, I found out about this creative writing program that would get me out of English class and take me off campus, right? But my whole thing was get me off campus. I need to not be here all day long. This is driving me crazy, right? So I got into this program for writing, which I did not really care about specifically, but I knew I could do the creative writing thing and get English credit for it. So while I was there, this older kid, Gary, who was in the art side, the drawing side, we both started bonding over comic books. We were the only people in the building who both geeked out about comics, talk. And then we said one day, you know, it's funny. We can remember all this crazy stuff about, like, how many different Captain Americas they've been. You know, is the Vision really built by Ultron, or was he really the original Human Torch? And all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, useless. Why would you need to know any of it? But you can pull it up like that. But I cannot tell you what Charlemagne's horse's name was, or what he called his castle, or which of the senators actually killed Julius Caesar. Things that you were taught in history class that you need to pass. Like, you need a grade in that, but you can't remember any of that. And so we were like, maybe if they did it in comic book form, people would remember it. It would be more interesting, more fun, you know, like that. So we told our teachers that, our two, I guess they weren't really teachers, but like guides, mentor type guides, like guiding your writing or your art, whatever, and tutors, whatever, right? And they're like, oh, that's cute, guys, bye. And then they came back a little while later and they said, look, the city government has this thing where they want alternative means of teaching younger kids basic math, basic English stuff. Jeff, you're really good at English, like always have been. I'm verbally precocious, whatever they called it back then. Like, I was reading at like a high school level when I was like six, something like that, right? So they were like, and Gary, you can draw your little butt off. How would you guys like to make a comic book, an educational comic book for younger kids in DC? And we were like, is that a job? And they were like, yes. And so my first sale was when I was 13. I sold my first comic book script for this thing with Gary when I was 13. So that's what I thought. Oh, great. I will do this, make comics. It'll be awesome. Meanwhile, my dad's collecting people. And he went out one day and I came back home after we had sold this thing, because this is amazing, as you can imagine. I'm not even legally allowed to work and I've already sold this job thing. Come running in the house. All these people are in the house I've never seen before. I told my dad the whole big story, blah, blah, blah. And then I ran out there. Back then, there was no such thing as a cell phone. So I'd go run in the back room and call my friend on the phone, right? And when I came back out, my dad was like, you didn't notice all those people were here? And I was like, no, I know them. They're friends of yours, I guess. You're always bringing people up in here. I mean, usually not like 9,000 of them, but, you know, whatever. He's like, well, they think you should be an actor. And I was like, what? Like, what are you, high now? Right? And he's like, yeah, they were at the Folger Theater. They were doing The Tempest or something at the Folger at that time. And they're like, yeah, your son came in. He acted out all the parts. He was funny. He did all the stuff. And he didn't seem bothered by the fact that there were like 10 strangers in the room. Right. So you should think about it, Jeff. And I was like, all right, well, I will. He's like, also, it'll double your chances getting into this high school, because you have to audition to get into this high school. If they don't like your art, you can go do the thing. If you got into both, you can double major. Right. Because they would let you do that. Right. And I was like, all right, I never really thought about acting before, but if you guys think I can do it, okay. What do we do? He says, you have to come up with a monologue. And I was like, I don't know what that is. So like basically you memorize, not a speech, but like a character. Like if you saw in a movie, you take out a section, memorize it, and you do the one person talking. And I was like, oh, okay. So I memorized The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe and made a little play out of it. All right, that's going to be my thing. Got my little portfolio, got my little, you know, my monologue in my head, go up there. And I get there and they were like, yeah, sorry, students, potential students, but the school, the DC school board has said, we're working you all too hard. So, because the school was like real school in the morning. And then like about 2:30 until 6, it turned into whatever your dance or music or whatever. Right. So we can't do that anymore. You can't double major. You got to choose. Right. So if anyone's up here trying to double major, sorry about it. Choose your strength and go in. And I was like, I don't. I don't know what to do. I can't call my dad from here. It's the middle of the day. I don't have any. I have just enough money bus fare to get home with. I can't use a payphone. Again, no cell phones back then, kids. So I pulled out a quarter and I flipped a coin. And it came up ahead. So I went and auditioned for the theater department and I got in. And that was me as an actor for the next 15 years. It was wild too, because I was really not thinking about acting. Like, I learned everything like that year. Like, it was crazy. Like, it helped me though, because I was much more quiet, introverted type of person. And after that year, I never was again. Like, the version of me you meet that was made that 2 years I was at Duke Ellington. So, it was great. It was great. It was great. But obviously, I was always really a writer, because sooner or later, you get back on the path. So, you know, I can't believe.
That's right, y'all. Jeffrey Thorne was originally trained to be an actor. And it all started because of a comic book that he wrote and a coin toss.
Knowing the Jeffrey Thorne that we talk to now, he's a writer at the very core of his being. So it's hard for me to believe that that even warranted a coin toss.
He was 14. He had to find a way to figure things out. And he wasn't a too bad actor. I mean, he was even able to parlay that acting talent, you know what I'm saying, into a scholarship at CalArts. So no slouch.
Right, but CalArts ain't make it easy for him, and he didn't love acting that much. So it's crazy that he even made it through.
Well, and I was like, look, I told you all this in public, I'm going to tell you like this in private. I am not rich. My folks are not rich. This is one of those schools that if it was Harvard, everybody would understand why we're paying so much damn money for me to be here. This is a little school. At this time, CalArts was a little school in California, a conservatory. Which meant if I didn't graduate, none of my credits counted, right? I had blown my scholarship because I yelled at the dean at one point. And they were like, okay, no more scholarship. and then this teacher basically tried to get me to quit. And I was like, look, my folks work too damn hard. I don't know what these other rich kids got, but this is not easy money for us. So unless you kick me out, I'll be graduating, and the rest of my life is none of your damn business. Maybe you shouldn't be my mentor. She was like, maybe I shouldn't. I was like, I don't think it's a maybe. That was me being nice. You're not my fucking mentor.
It was not easy. And you could imagine it was a weakness, but I'm going to counter you with a difficult play with this clip right here and show you how he made that a strength.
I mean, the easy thing that anybody will say is like, look, you just have to believe in yourself and all that. But really, some of it's arrogance, like, fuck this. This will not stand, like, whatever. Some of it is I'm watching people who I know can't do it succeed. I'm like, well, if this motherfucker is getting somewhere, then I'm not really allowed to quit, because look at this fool, and he's terrible. So yeah, he can do it. Like, I'm worse if I quit now than if I had just quit last week before I knew that this fool was doing something. So there's that. The other thing that helped me was I care more about writing than I ever cared about acting. So even when I was being successful as an actor, when I didn't get a job, it didn't really hurt me. Where the other feeling, the other actors that I knew, they would get crushed all the time. Like, if they didn't get a little tiny job, they were like, oh, my career's over. And I'm like, man, there'll be another. Look, you were up for, like, street gang member number four. There'll be another street gang member number four. You might even be number two next time. You know, like that. Don't worry about it. Right. And they're like, Jeff, you don't understand. Every little bit, and you got to move up. And this was a big director. And it could have been, you know, I could have shown, you know. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. All that's fair. I guess I just don't care like you do. It just doesn't hurt my heart. The reason was is because I just care more about writing. When I don't get some writing gigs, that crushes me. So like 10 years later, I figured out, oh, that's what they were talking about.
Poignant counterpoint. So Jeff overcomes the odds and graduates in acting. What now?
while Jeff showed a lot of grit, you know, that grit thing that Angela Duckworth be talking about, and made it through. But we all know, we've seen movies, we've heard the stories, acting is a tough, tough career. So obviously, while he made it in, you know what I'm saying, he took some licks, right? But I do have a special clip, not from the interview.
Ooh, I'm excited now. Where you pulled this clip from?
It's a bit of a throwback from that one time Jeff showed off his pipes.
His what?
He was singing. Jeff was singing. So he did an interview way back before you were born, before I could probably form memories, for real, sang a little song, and talks about how he landed his first gig.
The first year I got out of college, I was totally broke and living in a warehouse on Skid Row. And my friend and I had just spent our last money on our last food, and I had gotten fired, and he had quit because the reason they fired me was really crummy, and he was protesting, which was really stupid. So we both got acting jobs that week of Christmas, and paid all our bills and called our families up and told us not to send out the National Guard. And, I mean, but to go from like destitute to solvent and like working very, very competitive profession, basic days, and have it happen at Christmas time was like great. I thought so. I'll always remember that.
Hey, I'm not gonna put Jeff on blast like that. If you know, you know. But I do know what his big acting gig was. That's where my dad knows him from. He was in that In the Heat of the Night TV series, and his name was Wilson.
Ah, sweet. Look at that.
Ah, I see what you did there. That was a good one. Again, if you know, you know.
Word, and for more than 110 episodes, was that 6 seasons? Like, Jeff was no slouch, as I said earlier, but at the end of the day, it's like you said, Lou, he's not an actor. That wasn't his ultimate passion.
That's right, Jeff. Get out the game and move toward your destiny. Screw it all. Leave acting behind.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that's essentially what happened. One day he just up and quit. Like, can you imagine it? Like, Jeff was on set one day, that Jeff wasn't on set the next day. He was just like, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Just altogether, quit the show, quit the whole industry, I'm gone. Some people thought, yo, you gotta be crazy doing this.
The other thing is, it depends on what. Like, I quit acting and straight up quit. I got yelled at. I don't know which podcast you heard, but some lady at a party. Did you hear that story from one of these podcasts? This lady just like rolled on me at this party. I didn't even know this chick. And she was just telling me all the fool I was, and how lucky I was. And I was, you know, when would I ever get this chance again? And I'm like, do you not think I'm a good actor? Cause you're acting like I won the damn lottery. Like, and threw my money out the window. Like, yeah, if you can get a job, you can get another job. But I wasn't trying that. I wanted to be a writer, which made people laugh. And what makes you think? A lot of that.
Now, I wish I could say that transition was smooth, but it's probably like a decade-ish before Jeff got in that writing door. He was already in the world of TV and screenplays and was trying to get into writing that way.
He wouldn't be able to get into writing anything, you know, like, until he got back to his roots. Yeah, he got to get back to his roots. You know, he broadened his medium, you know what I'm saying, like his dad did for him, listened to some advice from his wife. This led him right back to the wonderful world of Star Trek.
The short version of the story is, I tried to be a screenwriter. That wasn't working. My wife said, look, either quit that and let's do something else, or maybe try short stories, you know, like novels and short stories. So I entered into a Star Trek contest. This is a really short version. First year I didn't get in. They sent me a little note back that said, nope, not good enough. And then it was a form letter. And in the margin, it wrote, I want to see 3 more stories from you next time. Right. So the following year, I sent him 6 stories. And that year I got silver medal. And I turned that into writing more short stories for them, and ultimately a novel. And then all of a sudden, out in Hollywood, the same people that wouldn't take my calls, all of a sudden, because someone else had bought my stuff, I was an author now. And I was like, I sold like 3 short stories in a Star Trek novel. You're an author! You know, come talk to us.
After that, Jeff started getting pieces in a few more anthologies. He writes a few Ashcans.
Ashcans?
Oh, word. You signed off before then. That's basically like your indie digital comic before digitals were in. And you too broke to get the paper media. So it was a thing in the comic world. Jeff explains it.
Okay. That isn't the first one. But okay. An Ashcan used to be literally the paper that was left over when you would make anything in a magazine or a newspaper or whatever. The leftover paper that was uneven or whatever would be thrown into the ash can and ultimately, I guess, burn, which is why they would call it the ash can, right? But if you come at the end of the day, you can either get it for free or buy it off the company and make stuff with it. So everything from old magazines, like cheapy magazines to whatever, that's what you used to use to make like a comic book if you couldn't afford to do it. And when you were trying to show your stuff, you could make an ash can, which would be a sort of one throwaway thing. We say, hey, I can draw, right? Look, here's my comic book. So we did, you could do that. Now you can just put it up on the web and in full color, gorgeous, never needs to be printed, send somebody an email link. And they're like, damn, you know. So, but really, especially in the book and comic book world, it's harder, obviously, for making a TV show or something like that. Even that you can do yourself nowadays. The more of your own stuff you can make, the more you have to show. So the people that I interacted with when I started out were always like, what else have you got? Like, this is great. Got you in the office. We're not going to make this. What else you got? And if you didn't have anything else to say, to sell them, to talk about, that was the end of your conversation. Go home now. And they probably aren't going to call you again. But if you got 6 other things going on, you're getting called back even if they don't buy anything that day. They will call you again. I know, because that's what happens to me all the time.
Wow. Ashcan's down. That's kind of dope. I'm not going to lie. That's kind of dope. So he's writing anthology work. Uh-huh. And he's working on some indie comics. Following?
Right. But he's still trying to get into screenwriting because Jeff was trying to be where that money reside, where the money reside.
I tell people this all the time. If I had enough people buying my novels that I could just write novels, I'd quit TV in a heartbeat. If I had enough people buying my comics that I could just live making comics, I wouldn't do TV. What would I need that for? Same thing with TV. TV is great. It makes me, I pay all my bills. I love writing it. And there's a reason I don't do as much of the other stuff.
Right.
It doesn't pay as much. Can't live on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but who wouldn't want to be in absolute control? I'm not in absolute control on TV. I got studios and, you know, sometimes there's a showrunner I'm under. Mostly there's a showrunner I'm under. That's their point of view you're trying to serve. You know, and you do your best work and everything and you love it. But a novel's just you. So if you could make a living just doing that, you know, like I don't have to ask anybody what's in my book. Just do it. And enough people like it, I don't have to do anything else.
Right. Okay. So we've talked to several writers and artists about this comics industry, though.
Yeah, and there are some writers you think made it, but are 2 days from going back to selling crack, you heard?
Ah, that's that hip-hop saved my life for my boy Wazalu Muhammad Jocko. I see.
Yeah. That one was just for you. But I wanted to let the listeners know this comic money is fragile.
Facts. But Jeff is published now. He was always a writer. But after that Star Trek story called Lightroom got him a silver medal in the 6th Strange New World Star Trek anthology, he was a writer.
And that's the thing that gets his foot in the door.
Gotten a lot of development stuff doing that. And then a young lady came to me at one point and said, hey, our mutual friend told me you know how to write crime fiction. I said, yes. And she said, well, I've got a crime idea that I can take into the Dick Wolf Company, but I don't really write crime. And the window is very short. But if we can do this together, I can get this pilot in front of the right people and we might both sell this show. You want to partner up? And I said, all right, let's go. And she had a great idea. And that script got taken in and they said, no, we're not going to buy this stupid idea of you two. But would you like to be on staff on Criminal Intent? And long story short, we said, yes, we would. And we lasted about half a season before they canned us. We were not a good team. And then even longer story, I left that show and got onto Leverage. And I stayed on Leverage for 3 seasons. And that sort of started the career.
So folks start hearing about this Jeff dude, you know, Jeffrey Thorne, your little chatters up and down their timeline, or I guess the grapevine back then. And he starts getting some TV work, you know, some actual TV work. And then some of those comics he wrote, specifically Prodigal, were mad important because it earned him an encounter with the big dog, Dwayne McDuffie. Gotta whisper his name, put the respect.
In the animation side, I've been trying to get on Justice League, and Dwayne McDuffie was nice enough to read my stuff, but he kept rejecting it. So I just finally went, I guess I'm not going to be writing on this great show that I had to be a part of, right? I didn't get that shot. But he read an indie comic I did with my best friend called Prodigal, and he called me out at the Comic-Con one day. It's Jeff Thorne. I turn around, giant-ass Dwayne McDuffie is like towering over all the children. And he's like, you are funny. And I was like, I am not funny, giant man. And he's like, you are funny. I read your comic. You got any idea for Ben 10? And I was like, no, your ass kept not hiring me. I figured I wasn't going to get any animation work. Because if you won't hire me, nobody's going to hire me. Right. He's like, well, you're an idiot. I want to see a few pictures from you in the next week, 2 weeks. You got 2 weeks to come up with some stuff for Ben 10. Ben. So I did, and he bought one, and then I just didn't stop writing animation. Whenever I was on a break from the real job, so-called, I would fall into an animation gig, pick up some money, write some Ben 10, some Spider-Man. That sort of culminated with the Black Panther, running the Black Panther show.
We are colleagues, allies. I don't think we are buddies.
And I haven't really done any animation since then. I mean, what you going to do after you ran your own? What are you going to do after you ran your own show? Like, what else can I do? Run another show? I don't, like, it's not going to be the Black Panther, so I don't know what that would be. And then it's just been like anybody else in the game, just trying to get work, like going from show to show. A friend of mine put me in contact with Courtney. Courtney Kemp. And she was doing Power, obviously, the giant juggernaut that is Power. And she told me, first of all, we geeked out about Avengers Endgame. And her partners were like, why are these two fools talking about Endgame? We're trying to have an interview here. And she's like, well, look, I'm going to spin off Power. Power's going to come to an end this season. I was like, what? Because nobody knew. She's like, yeah, that's why you had to sign those non-disclosure agreements. You can't tell anybody. Like, what? I turned in a little jock for the whole afternoon. And then she's like, but I'm looking for a number two to be on the spinoff. And I'm like, who, me? And she's like, yeah, maybe. Maybe so. And I ended up on that show. Did the first season. Then COVID hit. Everything kind of fell apart. Got my legs back under me, and now I'm on Magnum PI. So that's how it goes. Like, and a lot of comic book stuff. Say yes to a lot of comic book stuff. Still got an indie book coming out from Kickstarter we did called Menagerie, and three of my own coming out later in the year, my own imprint, whatever. Yeah. That's going to be fun. And the art's all done and stuff. I'm just looking for a hard copy publisher because I could do it digitally myself, but I'm going to have books this time around. So I'll have more on that. I'll have more on that later. Three different books, superhero sci-fi and sort of crime, completely different. Great new artists, some of them, and got some good covers. There's this young lady, Apple Nunez, her asking, draw! I got her as a cover artist. I'm definitely doing an actual book with her. Like, I was lucky to get her as a cover artist. And she's like, I don't know about my sequentials. And I'm like, let me see. I'm like, girl, you better shut up. You're hired. Right. I just need to come up with a story. I'm like, damn. So.
Now, it's like 2011, and Jeff has secured that bag, financed up, right? And he's riding his ass off for TV and animation. Got some Times on the Librarians, which was a solid TV show. A little Ben 10 here on Cartoon Network, another solid one. A little Ultimate Spider-Man on Disney XD, which I personally enjoyed. And when Lion's Ford started up, he gets to do the Knight Rider comic.
Ironically, it's all of these things together that affords him the opportunity to pitch for Marvel, where he could go write big comics, but not make a lot of money.
Damn, man. But yeah, when we get back, we're going to spend a bit of time on Marvel's Mosaic, an original character created by Jeffrey Thorne and crew.
We know that Jeff loves sci-fi and is really a writer. And I really think Mosaic stories help get you into the sort of mental approach of Jeff's writing. But like Wilson said, we'll get to that after the break. What's up? Lou here with the first reason to pick up Green Lantern number one. I think if the team gets this run where we're going, we're going to look back at this issue and see all the groundwork being laid. There's a lot going on and a lot of questions to answer. Is the United Planets really going to work? Green Lantern rings don't work on magic? What's a Crux world? And why is it so important? Where does the Teen Lantern's gauntlet come from? This book definitely has some far-reaching consequences. There's a lot of details in this 40-page giant, and I think this run goes, we'll be checking back to this issue for reference. So, that's the first reason to pick up Green Lantern number one, with Jeffrey Thorne, Dexter Soy, Marco Santucci, Alex Sinclair, and Rob Lee.
Having your fingers in a lot of different spaces as a writer, especially, you don't have to just write whatever it is you think you're meant to write. Like, I didn't start out wanting to write books. I ended up doing it because that's where I could do it. And it ended up leading me back to where I wanted to be, which is over on the TV and movie side. I kind of wanted to write animation, but not really. I wanted to write Justice League, right? Like, I didn't want to write animation. I wanted to write on the Justice League show. Didn't get to do that. Ended up writing other stuff, and then ultimately ended up where I ended up there. So, yeah, you can say Jeff's good at this thing, but also I say yes to almost everybody. Like, if there was money in it or a connection that I would get from it, and it was writing, yeah, I could do that. Absolutely. Let's go.
So, Jeff has most of these stories himself, but I want to take a minute to gas Mosaic because that was one of my favorites from like 16, 17.
Yo, big time. And a lot of these Mosaic clips are actually from an interview we did way back in 17. By having him talk about an original character, he got to contribute to Marvel in a super crazy helpful way. And, you know, it helped us understand his approach to the craft.
Okay, so Mosaic follows Morris Sackett, a bona fide professional basketball superstar who has his entire life taken away from him when that Terrigen Mist Cloud comes through, because, you know, he's an inhuman. Clouds roll through, take his old life, career, and body away from him. Now, Morris hops from body to body, piecing together the reality that was his old life, which actually turns out to be fake AF.
Wild. Wild premise, wild story. Jeff pulled it off brilliantly, and he did it with a pair of our faves, Kari Randolph and Emilio Lopez. Like, they created one of the most visually stunning comics that I've ever read, that we've ever read, actually, as a crew. Like, that thing was fire.
Kari and Emilio, nothing but excellence. Jeff, the writer extraordinaire, one book, Marvel, new character. It was great. And on top of all of that, the dialogue was meaningful and crisp in a way that's rare. No two characters talk the same. And he handled the way we talk masterfully, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, man. And it all happened because he spent years putting in that work. And when opportunity knocked, Jeff was prepared to get lucky. He opened that door up.
The quick way it started was I was brought in along with David Walker and a couple other writers whose names I never got to pitch for the Black Panther series that is now being written by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Obviously, he got it. So we didn't. David went on to, you know, Luke Cage, Power Man, and Nighthawk, and what do you call it? Avengers, Occupied Avengers, all that, right? So he's still in the mix over there. And I thought I was out. Like, this is a very long story, but it took a while for them to reject who they rejected and take Ta-Nehisi, whatever. Can never say it right. Whatever. And I was like, well, of course they gave it to the guy with a Pulitzer. Why was I even in there? Right? So I'm out here in California going, well, that was my time at Marvel. Not, you know, that was it. Right. And Axel Alonso called me up and he's like, oh, we liked your pitch. It just wasn't where we wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, so what's this call about? And he's like, so what else would you like to do? And I was like, is this a prank? What is this really? Like, come on, man. Don't say that to me. You know how many comics I got up in here? What would I like to do? Come on. Right. And he's like, no, seriously. Like, do you want to do something on one of our titles? We got a bunch of stuff opening up right now. People are finishing up their arcs. It's almost anything you want except X. Can't have anything on the X. And I was like, well, I knew that wasn't happening. Damn it. But I was like, well, what was that other thing you said? And he's like, oh, yeah, you could pitch us just new shit. And I was like new stuff? Like brand new stuff? And he's like, yep. And I was like, okay. So we talked about some stuff. And I was like, look, I want to do a character that's kind of like able to move from the very low street level, no superpowers, just regular folks, all the way up to Galactus. Right? And he's like, what would that be? And so I talked to him about this character that I had in the back of my head for a while. Didn't have a name yet. And I was like, blah, 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 and blah, blah. And he's like, well, how come he's not Dead Man? Right? And I was like, oh. And I explained to him why he wasn't Dead Man. And he's like, we're doing that. And I was like, are you sure? He's like, that explanation for why this character is not Dead Man? Yep, sold. We're doing that.
Oh, right? Man.
So I was like.
It's so well executed that I never made the Dead Man comparison.
Well.
And now I'm sitting here like, how did I not?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody, the way I tell stories is I always start you off in a familiar spot, right? So a lot of the criticism on the web of the book initially was, well, this guy's a jerk, you know, this isn't a superhero, you know, I don't want to follow a guy who's this kind of a jerk, and how come he gets the superpowers? Why don't you give it to somebody who's going to go out and save the day? All this kind of stuff. And I'm like, man, just wait a minute. That's just chapter one. I'm telling you a story. Got to start somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of the Marvel characters, it's kind of on formula. A lot of the Marvel characters start out as jerks, right? And then something happens and it changes their mind and they decide to use their gifts for the world. I'm not saying that's how Mosaic would have ended up, because I don't know. But he could have ended up a villain. I don't know. That was the whole point of the book. That was literally the whole point of the book. What would happen if you just got juice like this and all of a sudden you had to decide?
Right.
And then all the stuff starts happening. It happens really fast because you know how superhero comics work. So all the stuff's flying at you and you don't really have a lot of chance to decide. And, you know, how the story is, how is this young man going to grow up to be a man? He spent his whole life being a boy. How's he going to grow up to be a man? Now, he could choose to be a violent, dangerous man. Many men choose that choice. But let's see what happens. All the things that he gets thrown at, what would you do? That was the question that the book had. And Axel was down for it. And we both were like, you know, we're not going to get more than 12 out of this. And I was like, I'm happy with 12. I can close it out at 12. It'll feel like a book if we close out at 12. So Axel was totally down for it. And he put Nick Lowe, and Nick was like, yeah, let's do this.
Hey, yo, that's a wild pitch. Like, what? And that how is this not Dead Man question is a cool nugget of knowledge. a nice little nugget of wisdom that we have come back to ask ourselves a few times, actually.
Right. Like when we came to Poyev Podcast, or when we started that other thing we can't talk about yet. My favorite thing about talking to Jeff about Mosaic, though, is how much it falls in line with what we believe about Poyev.
Right, because, yo, when we tell y'all that Jeff knows little to nothing about professional sports, we mean Jeff knows next to nothing about sports.
Yo, it's incredible how unaware he is. If they weren't in a commercial, Jeff doesn't know who they are. But you know what Jeff does know? Celebrity.
Even if it's only in a limited capacity, right? Jeff did have an acting career. We said that before the commercial break. And even if he himself was not a celebrity, he was most definitely in that environment. So he gets it.
This is the part where his reality influenced his fiction, and he was able to dramatize the idea of a young celebrity in a very real way.
I started him off as a jerk. One point, I don't know anything about basketball. Nothing. I mean, I'm not a play. I don't follow sports at all. At all. Like, at all. So I saw these Kobe comparisons. I saw these LeBron comparisons. And I'm like, you know how I know those guys? Because they have TV commercials. That's the only reason I know who they are. Okay. But I know how celebrity works because I used to be a little bit, tiny bit of a celebrity. Like a long time ago, probably before you all were born, I was on TV for 5 minutes. So I got a little slice of what it's like backstage and all of that environment and how it's corruptive and how it's dangerous for young people who don't have good guidance and all of that kind of stuff. And we've seen the effects of that in the real world all the time, right? Everybody starts wilding out for crazy reasons. What were you guys doing at that party in Brazil? Like, oh, you all heard about that? Yeah, there are cameras in our phones, you know. What were you all doing at that crazy ass party? You guys know better than that. Oh, we didn't think anybody was going to catch us because we're 17. That stuff's been going on forever because as soon as the universe starts saying yes to you and never says no to you, you start losing your sense of, you know, there are consequences to your actions. Right. Here's a free Mercedes for you, Mr. Hanks. I already have a car. I don't really need another car. Yeah, but here's a great new one right off the line. Would you drive it for us? Just for free, right? That's your whole life. Every moment of your life. So what kind of an ego do you have to withstand that and still be a decent person? I take my hat off to people like that because the temptations are ridiculous. Now, squeeze it all back down into Mosaic. You've got a kid who was tapped at like 11 years old. Oh, my God, this guy's going to be a star. What I do know about sports is how the advertising companies, shoe companies, like CrossFit or what is it, Under Armour, all those kind of companies, Nike, they find these kids there in like middle school. Like they start looking at them young and they're like, oh, this guy's going to be the next LeBron. This guy's going to be the next Michael Jordan. Look how well he plays at this age. Or her, depends on the sport, right? They immediately start subsidizing. And the parents usually are just regular old folks, right? Not poor, not rich, you know, it runs the gamut. But they never seen this kind of money or this kind of attention. They're like, oh, gravy train, cha-ching. And most people make the mistakes, all the same mistakes, which is what the companies count on. Nothing against the companies. I don't know these people. Maybe they're all decent too. But we've seen these documentaries. We've seen the negative stories in the news. People burn out. They freak out. They do weird stuff. And you're like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, celebrity, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, this guy was 15 like 2 years ago. Now he's a starting forward for the biggest basketball team in the country. He's just supposed to eat that on his own? How's he supposed to process that? Every camera, girls, grown-up women at your mom's age trying to get you to go to bed with them. You know, I mean, that's real. Lil Bow Wow made a rap about grown women trying to get with him when he was 12.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's real, though. That's straight up real, though. People think that's a joke and he's all cute and look, he's going to grow up and be fine. And he's telling you what actually happens in his daily life. Okay? So I wanted to take a character that you really don't see. I didn't want to talk about movie star celebrity because people would think, oh, he used to be an actor. You're talking about people you know, right? I'm like, nope. I just needed a celebrity level person that the average person would go, okay, yeah, that's a celebrity. People are like, you're talking about these celebrities. I'm like, I really am not. I'm talking about celebrity as a thing. Celebrity, capital C, as a thing. And so Morris is this guy who's had his whole life shaped for him. why would you disbelieve everyone telling you how great you are all the time? And you got on a court and you prove how great you are all the time. This is just reality. And then this weird thing happens where no one can see him, no one can hear him, and no one can lie to him anymore. Literally no one can lie to him anymore because all he has to do is step in your head.
Right. Not out.
That was crap. You're full of it.
This is Jeff. This is just part of what makes him a good writer. He's really worked at his craft.
Yeah, combine that with his love of story in a variety of mediums and his love of sci-fi in particular, he seems like the perfect guy to take over the cosmic DC adventures of Green Lantern.
So again, pick up Mosaic. The trades are out there. Maybe you can help revive this book. Jeff, after Mosaic, get a little bit of work here and there. And next, we're going to talk about his Green Lantern run.
Hey, wait. Hold up.
What's up?
So we're going to run through his whole origin story, not even mention that he black.
I mean, he is black, but maybe in Jeff's case, it didn't really matter.
Of course it matters, man. It always matters. And you didn't even mention that this GL book stars your boy John Stewart. Like, what?
All right. You got me. This was all part of the plan. His blackness was always present. I just wanted to show you how smooth it sounds when you filter it out. Hard work. F the haters. Blase, blase.
Oh, wow.
But if we really going to talk about his blackness, we're going to need to spin it in reverse.
So that's that. It sounds like when you do a short like that, it all sounds like a straight line, but it really wasn't, you know. And you look at the resume now, I always tell people it didn't live as well as it reads. It looks great when you look at it laid out, but every gap in between one of those jobs is usually me scrambling for work.
And I'm not even going to have us roll through credits because you need to play the remixed episode now.